The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, Dermot Gavin has quietly slipped in. We're going to talk about another extraordinary garden. Dermot, of course, Chelsea gold medal winner, horticulturist, garden designer, and much more. Dermot, good morning.
Morning, how are you?
Bourneville.
Yes.
Chocolate, so, yeah. But much more.
Much more. So there was a river born in this place, this kind of rural place, 4 miles south of Birmingham city centre, and that's where Bourneville gets its name. There was a trend at the time to put everything in French, so we get the word Bourneville from the River Bourne. But the real story starts with a Quaker family.
And these are the Cadburys, the name Cadburys. We're still so familiar with.
Yes. So the Cadburys were a Quaker family. That's very important in terms of the whole story and their attitude to commerce, I suppose. They were living, they moved to Birmingham city centre in 1794.
And what were they making at that time?
They had a shop that sold scones and tea and coffee, but cocoa became the big thing. And drinking chocolate then became the big thing. They had a number of sons. One of the sons really concentrated on this idea of drinking chocolate. Really important for them at the time because they were temperance people. They didn't drink. They believed in, you know, kind of being good, godly people. Birmingham would have been this kind of industrial cesspit in a way if you were the working class.
I mean, heavy industry, all the dirty Victorian industries, the steel and all the rest of it, coal everywhere, filthy.
Filthy and a life expectancy of 40 years of age. Oh. So absolutely nothing. So filthy, and people would have lived in slums, so maybe terraced houses with maybe small yards.
But if you had money, you lived in the countryside.
So that was really interesting. So if you had money, you had all sorts of privileges. You lived a longer life. You had access to good food. In Birmingham city centre, gin was cheaper than clean water. So really quite extraordinary. So they started introducing drinking chocolate and making that a very popular drink, and it was a hit straight away and made them realise that there's something here. So they started a factory initially Birmingham.
In Birmingham.
City
so yep. They contributed to, if you like, to the pollution and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
But then
they had this idea that kind of morals took over, and they decided to build a new factory, but not only a new factory, a new town. And a new town that would be based on the idea of a garden. So in effect, they were building a factory in a garden. They found this plot of land, as I say, beside the River Bourne, about 4 miles south of the city centre. And initially, they bought about 300 acres and built their factory. They built maybe a dozen houses and they bussed people in initially.
So the idea was, the philosophy underlying the beginning of this is, why should the people who work for us have to live in squalid conditions?
Squalid, unhealthy, whatever. So they believed that being fair to everybody. There was another extraordinary thing about this also. People living in the city centre had no privacy, absolutely none. So there were communal workplaces, almost communal living spaces, you know, tenements. And going to the loo, you had absolutely no. So only the wealthy or the middle classes had access to any sort of privacy. So moving them out, moving workers out to the suburb, not forcing them to move out. And indeed, what they built wasn't only for Cadbury's workers. It was open to whoever wanted to live there. What they built had plenty of room, plenty of space. Individual houses, and individual houses with plots. So fresh air, no very tall walls, lots of circulation of air.
No house could be more than two stories, and no house could occupy more than a quarter of the site.
So a quarter of the site, so that space was given over to gardens. A small garden in the front, and kind of maybe a sixth of an acre out the back.
And the idea was that you could recreate in the garden, you know, take the air, but also you could grow things.
You could grow. So every house, they'd start you off with six fruit trees, including apple trees, and that's what you were encouraged to grow fruit and vegetables, but also they believed that flowers made people feel better about their environment.
And they were good business people as well, witness the fact that the Cadbury brand became global and now is not owned by Cadbury's anymore, but I mean hugely successful. But the location was also sound for business reasons.
It was really sound because everything was about transport, wasn't it? So the two main ingredients, I suppose, if you're making what was originally drinking chocolate and then chocolate as we know it today, were would have been milk, which came in by the canals, and the cocoa, which came from the butter nibs, the chocolate in main part of the ingredient, came from railways from London and from Southampton. So off the ships and either into London or straight.
So they still had that connectivity.
Yes.
Now, the new factory, as it were, in Bourneville, when did that open?
I can't remember. They started in 1878, and I think the following year, 1879, I think it opened. So immediately they started building the first 16 houses and then that factory. And then in 1879, they bussed in, the first load of buses came, and that was 270 people from the city. And then people began to populate the whole town.
So then they buy more land,
yes,
because this project is going to expand. As their success grows, they need more workers and so on. So they start to build, effectively, a garden town.
Absolutely. And at this stage, so starting with 300 acres. So remember, 4 miles from Birmingham city centre, and the suburbs were developing all around them. Now it's 1,000 acres. And now, you know, maybe 20 years ago, they started on even though they don't have the Cadbury's family don't have the factory anymore or that business. They started on another town to continue the work of the kind of Quaker pioneers.
Now, the idea of this thing, it's not willy-nilly development. They actually got an architect in to design the whole thing.
Absolutely. And there's a great arts and crafts feel about the place. It reminds me of that place, Port Merion, then with William Clough Ellis. But they got a top arts and crafts architect. And he designed not only the houses, but the wide boulevards, the town halls, and the sports facilities. The sports facilities, they were really quite incredible. I mean, at one stage they had 70 pitches there. Now, at this stage, they have seven football and rugby pitches, which is still sizable for a suburb of a big city. But greenery and all those amenities were hugely important.
So did they have a planting philosophy?
They had a planting facility. To keep it English would have been a big part of their philosophy. Everybody was encouraged to grow fruit and vegetables. The other amazing thing about it was there was no alcohol allowed on site. So they had all these facilities, they had shops, but no alcohol was allowed to be sold. And that only changed in 2016 when a local news agent run by an Indian family saw that the ownership had gone to Nestle, who wouldn't have the same kind of moral concerns, and they got a license to open an office.
Prior to that, in Bourneville, which is still very much there,
yes,
you couldn't get a drink.
You couldn't get a drink. You could get plenty of chocolate and drinking chocolate. And now it's, it remains the same. It's run by the ethos. It's kind of a little bit clouded now because, of course, you have councils and local authorities who want a little bit of say in it. But still, the Bourneville Trust is there. And still, there are members of the Cadbury's factory making sure that they adhere to the original layout.
Now, you've sent me some great pictures.
Yeah.
I mean, the village green looks wonderful.
I mean, it's everything you would imagine, isn't it? But what amazes me about these pictures is the amount of people. Let's say if there's a sports day or if there's a dance in one of the ballrooms, tea dance. The amount of people that use these facilities, not only Cadbury's employees, but the main thing was, and what they used in their advertisement was, this is a factory in a garden. And the first place, Pat, I ever remember living was opposite the gates of the Cadbury's factory in Coolock in Dublin. And that, indeed, the first thing I'd see when I looked at those gates was a greenhouse right beside the opening gates. And that was surrounded by greenery. So
part of their philosophy continued. Extended to Coolock.
Yeah, and it was, the philosophy was an international philosophy in places like Chicago and other parts of Britain. And indeed, in Ireland, if we think of the Guinness family, now most of the facilities that the Guinness family would have created for citizens of Dublin and for their employees through the Ivy Trust would have been inner city, but there were playing fields outside.
Well, they had playing fields up along the main road to Crumlin, just
right
before you come to the Children's Hospital. They had the pool, had the Rupert Guinness Hall for theatre. So many things. So these were the exemplary employees of the employers of the day.
Who also recognised that if they were good to their employees, if they provided housing at reasonable cost. Now, the Cadbury family took it to another extreme. If you were ill or if you passed away before the age of 65, they would look after your family. They had a hospital. They had free healthcare for everybody who worked in the factory. And even in working in the factory, you had access to gardens, you know, on your break or whatever. Or if you were a little bit tired, there was a place that you could go and lie down, and you were allowed to dip your finger into the vats of chocolate as it passed.
Halcyon days, indeed. Dermot, thank you very much for joining us. That's Dermot Gavin, as I say, garden designer, Chelsea gold medal winner, and so much more.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.